Welcome to the deep dive. So if you're looking at the financial world right now, well, you're staring straight into a bit of a contradiction.
Yeah, absolutely. On one side, global equity markets seem to be celebrating. You know, the S&P is moving higher. European futures gained over 1%.
But then you look at the headlines. The geopolitical climate feels like it's darkening, right? We've got renewed U.S.-China tensions, pretty serious warnings coming from finance and defense experts.
It really is a classic case of market schizophrenia, isn't it?
Yeah.
It feels like short-term monetary, let's say, euphoria is just overriding these longer-term structural risks.
Okay, so that's our mission today, then, to sort of pull apart these competing forces.
Exactly. We're drawing on market reports, earnings calls, geopolitical analysis from this week. We're looking at three main drivers, really. First, the calming hand of the Federal Reserve. Second, some surprising corporate resilience. And third, this deepening geopolitical friction. And that includes some, frankly, structural challenges to key supply chains. Think semiconductors, defense.
All right, let's unpack that contradiction. And I guess we have to start with the biggest driver of the optimism right now, which is the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
Stocks are clearly gaining because Fed Chair Powell basically signaled another rate cut is, quote, on the cards later this month.
Precisely. And the market loves the idea of cheaper money, obviously. But what's really interesting is the justification Powell gave. He spent a lot of time talking about the labor market, pointing specifically to significant downside risks.
Yeah, he didn't just talk general weakness either. He used specific points, didn't he? He mentioned payroll jobs, supply and demand for labor declining quite sharply.
He did, and he repeatedly cited the low pace of hiring. He explicitly warned about the risk of unemployment ticking up.
So that's the ultimate bad news is good news scenario for the market.
That's the trade, yeah.
Yeah.
The Fed is basically saying, look, employment weakness worries us more than current inflation right now. And that effectively greenlights what the market was already pricing in two more cuts this year, October and December. It's a clear signal for a risk-on mood.
Okay, but hang on. Isn't that the core paradox right there? We're cheering a rate cut that's justified by signs of economic, well, distress, weakness in the labor market. How long can that possibly last before the underlying weakness actually spooks people?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's
yeah.
The question the market seems happy to ignore for now. They're placing a huge bet that the Fed can engineer a soft landing. You know, use cheaper credit to boost things before unemployment really bites.
And the Fed threw them another bone too, didn't they?
They did. A little bonus easing announcement. The end of quantitative tightening, that's the balance sheet runoff, is coming in a few months. That's sooner than expected.
Which just adds more fuel to the fire for the optimist.
Here fuel. Absolutely.
So the Fed's pumping confidence on the money side. But, you know, if you look at classic safe havens, the caution is still there. Gold's still near record highs.
Good point. Sophisticated investors are clearly still hedging their bets, allocating defensively, even while they ride this equity wave.
Which brings us neatly to the corporate health check.
Right. Investors might be willing to put money into stocks, but they're being very selective. They're backing companies that show real resilience in what's, frankly, a pretty tough global environment. And we saw surprising strength, for instance, from luxury giant LVMH in Q3.
Yeah, the luxury sector's had a rough patch, especially with worries about China. What was so special about LVMH's growth?
Well, it was the quality of the growth.
Yeah.
It wasn't just price hikes. It was driven by actual traffic and volume. That suggests genuine consumer demand is coming back. And we also saw their wine and spirits division, which had been struggling for like 2.5 years. It returned to growth. Mostly thanks to champagne restocking over in the U.S.
And the big one, the region, including mainland China, that returned to growth, too. That's a huge signal for high-end Chinese spending potentially recovering.
It is. Meanwhile, Europe was the only area that saw a decline. They blamed lower tourism spent, you know, stronger euro versus the weaker dollar effect.
So it suggests the core luxury consumer, maybe globally, is tougher than people feared.
Seems that way. Now, shifting gears from high-end bags to high-tech machines, let's look at ASML, Europe's most valuable listed company, critical for semiconductors. Their Q3 net sales, okay, they were a little soft, came in at $7.52 billion, estimate was $7.71 billion, a slight miss.
Right, a slight miss on sales, but the orders looked good.
Yeah, Q3 orders were a beat, $5.4 billion, and their forecast for Q4 net sales is strong, potentially up to $9.8 billion.
So what does that tell us? It's about the lag time in the chip industry.
Exactly. Near-term sales can be choppy. but the long-term picture looks solid. Look, ASML has a massive order backlog, $33 billion. That figure alone is expected to cover all of next year's consensus revenue estimates. And management basically confirmed the outlook, saying 2026 revenue shouldn't be below 2025's.
So the ship build-out just keeps rolling on.
He's unstoppable right now.
Okay, so resilience in luxury, resilience in high-tech machinery. Let's inject a bit of skepticism now. Let's look at the U.S. banks, J.P. Morgan, Citi, Goldman. They all reported pretty solid earnings numbers, didn't they?
The numbers looked good, yes. But listen to the CEOs. They were much more cautious, especially about credit risk.
Waving caution flags.
Big time. Jamie Dimon at J.P. Morgan gave us the quote of the week. He warned about cockroaches in the credit markets. This came after the collapse of Tricolor, and it points right at these opaque risks brewing in private credit. Maybe auto lending, too. His point was, you know, you spot one cockroach.
There are probably more hiding under the floorboards. Yeah, that's a sticky analogy.
It really is.
It reminds you that the biggest risks are often the ones you don't see coming. These niche areas, maybe poorly collateralized, that blow up quietly before anyone notices.
And that underlying caution definitely tempered the market's reaction, even to good results.
Absolutely. I mean, even Goldman Sachs, they had this huge 42% jump in investment banking fees. But the stock reaction was kind of mixed. Investors are clearly nervous about those credit warnings that came alongside the good numbers.
And this fear of the unknown, the unseen risk, it leads to huge swings in smaller, more specialized sectors, too.
Yeah, we saw that play out really fast in some niche tech areas. Astrolabs, ALA, took a 19% dive. Credo, CRDO, dropped sharply, too.
It's like the canary in the coal mine sometimes for these specialized tech plays.
What drove that, do you think? Competitive pressure?
That's the likely story. Probably competitive heat from the giants, maybe NVIDIA asserting itself with proprietary networking or Broadcom rolling out new competitive products. These smaller guys, their fortunes are tied so tightly to just a few big hyperscalers, momentum can flip on a dime.
Right. On the flip side, though, we keep seeing AI integration driving things in retail. Walmart's now using ChatGPT for direct sale.
Yeah, it reflects that broader trend. Companies using generative AI for immediate tangible impact on revenue.
And we also saw Levi Strauss managing profit growth despite tariffs, mainly by raising prices selectively, shows some brands still have pricing power.
Okay, so we've got the Fed's monetary confidence boosting the market. We've got these mixed corporate signals, high end's okay, credit looks shaky. Now we need to get into that third major tension, strategic geopolitics.
Which the market seems to be, like, you know, looking through right now. But the political temperature is definitely rising. President Trump is escalating trade threats again.
What's the latest?
Threatening to stop trade in cooking oil, apparently as retaliation because Beijing isn't buying enough American soybeans.
Okay. And China's pushing back with its own moves, right?
Yeah.
Financial maneuvering.
Yeah, the PBOC, China's central bank, set the yuan fixing stronger than expected against the dollar. It broke that 7.1 level.
Right. First time above 7.1 since that big tightening event back in November last year. That's not just a technical adjustment.
No, it feels like a strategic signal, doesn't it? Like Beijing is saying, we're confident in our position. We're not afraid of a stronger currency right now.
It projects negotiation strength.
Yeah.
But here's the really critical deep dive piece, I think. Something that goes way beyond rhetoric or temporary spats over soybeans or cooking oil.
Mm-hmm.
China seems to be moving towards structural control over the actual means of production. They've expanded export controls. Not just rare earths anymore, but now, crucially, lithium batteries. And they've asserted extraterritorial jurisdiction over tech goods made using Chinese components.
Lithium batteries? But they aren't in the final ships, are they?
No, that's the key point. This is about controlling process materials. The specific lithium batteries they're targeting are vital for the manufacturing process of semiconductors. They power and regulate the incredibly complex equipment in the fabrication plants, the fabs.
Ah, okay. So even if the finished chip doesn't have the battery, you can't make the chip without equipment powered by these specific batteries.
Precisely. It's an attempt to assert control over the infrastructure of future technology itself. It's like putting a potential chokehold on the machinery that makes the chips everyone needs.
Wow, that feels much more strategic, much more long-term than tariffs on goods.
Exactly. It's seen as a structural strategy. It puts vulnerability right into the global supply chain. Doesn't matter if you're making chips in the U.S., Taiwan, Europe. It's controlled by proxy. And we see this assertive approach elsewhere, too. China opening an antitrust probe into Qualcomm over its purchase of Ototox, a vehicle tech company. using commercial regulation to potentially slow down competitors.
That really does sound like a potential long-term game changer. But strategic worries aren't just economic, are they? We need to touch on this hidden defense issue, U.S. Navy submarine production.
Yeah, this is a huge, critical problem. Doesn't get many financial headlines, but the strategic implications are profound. The U.S. industrial base just isn't delivering on schedule.
How bad is it?
Ballistic missile subs are delayed 12 to 17 months. The Virginia-class attack subs, delayed up to 3 years.
3 years? Why? Is it just labor shortages?
It's broader industrial base stress. Yes, labor shortages are part of it, but it's also supply chain bottlenecks for highly specialized parts and just a lack of surge capacity in the shipyards themselves.
And how does that compare to, say, China?
Well, contrast that stagnation with China. They're reportedly building subs at a rate of 4 to 6 per year. The projections are stark. China could have a fleet of 80 subs by 2035.
That kind of expansion directly challenges the U.S. undersea advantage, which is like the cornerstone of deterrence in the Pacific.
It absolutely is. So while markets are busy celebrating a potential rate cut, this long-term defense balance seems to be deteriorating because of industrial capacity issues.
Okay, just quickly, any other global political notes?
Well, Maria Corina Machado won the Nobel Peace Prize for her work promoting democracy in Venezuela, a nod to those ongoing struggles against authoritarianism. And in France, the prime minister survived no confidence votes after dropping plans to raise the pension age. So domestic calm restored in Paris, for now at least.
Right. So let's try and pull these threads together. What does this all mean for you, the listener, trying to navigate this landscape? We've got this global equity rally, seems almost entirely fueled by short-term hopes about monetary policy, the Fed confirming rate cuts, ending QT early.
And that narrative gets support from resilience in key corporate sectors, like we saw with LVMH and ASML. High-end consumer, high-tech equipment doing okay.
But, and it's a big but, that optimism is built on what feels like pretty shaky ground.
Shifting fragile sand is a good way to put it. The underlying structural risks are clearly building. Those cockroaches Jamie Dimon talked about are hiding somewhere in the credit system. And strategically, China is making moves to potentially put a permanent chokehold on the manufacturing process for future tech, not just the end products.
So the market's betting big on the Fed's ability to wave a magic wand and make economic weakness disappear.
That seems to be the bet. The ultimate lesson here might be that financial markets are often focused on managing the next quarter, the next news cycle. But strategic power, real power, is being redefined on a decade-long cycle.
Absolutely. The market's laser-focused on the immediate fix, cheaper money, while kind of squinting past these profound U.S.-China tensions.
Which leads us to the provocative thought to leave you with. How long can this optimism really hold up against the threat of actual physical strategic scarcity?
What happens when these underlying structural issues, China's control over essential process materials like those lithium batteries for chip making, or the U.S. Navy's struggle to build submarines, what happens when those start to bite in a tangible way?
Yeah, a way that isn't just rhetoric, but impacts the real global supply chain, forces a real look at the West's industrial capacity. When does that kind of industrial failure potentially cross over and become a financial crisis?